talk in these three lectures about three topics, and mostly today and maybe sometime for sometime tomorrow, I will talk about some very basic but important calculations for Gaussian unitary ensemble, and actually in more general for unitary ensembles. So later I will explain what I want to do here. Second thing that I want to talk about is a central limit theorem type results. For linear statistics. In random matrices. And in particular, I will explain a question. Leibovitz theorem. Which is quite simple, but surprisingly, well, it has very general form, and therefore the proof is very simple, and it holds for very many ensembles. All right, and the third thing that I want to talk about will be some generalizations, and essentially I have to decide. I will decide later what exactly will be here. There are two possibilities, either Wigner matrices or some general beta ensembles. All right. Okay, so today... I will start essentially as a warm-up. First, I will prove the formula for the joint distribution of the eigenvalues in GE. Of course, first I define again GE, just for convenience. And then I also will talk about k-point correlation functions. All right. Okay, so this is the plan. And... I start with a space of n by n Hermitian matrices. All right. So as was already mentioned, we have n squared parameters, of course. Let me denote. So if I consider matrix A, let me denote parameters in this way, real part, imaginary part of the off-diagonal elements, and finally diagonal elements. Right? And the ensemble of random matrices that I want to consider is the following. The measure has a... So you have a n by n Hermitian matrix. It has entries. Right? And then, of course, entry has a real part and imaginary part. And you have n squared parameters. Right? Now, the probability measure on the space of n by n Hermitian matrices that I want to consider has the following form. First, of course, first of all, you have a normalization constant. Remember, the total measure should be 1, therefore it will define normalization constant. Then you have exponent minus trace some polynomial of our matrix A, and you have a Lebesgue measure, right? So in particular, if V is a quadratic polynomial, say x squared, sometimes people put some normalization constant in front, we certainly only divide matrix or multiply matrix by a constant, then you have a very famous Gaussian unitary ensemble. And this was introduced by Wigner in the 50s. And in all this... calculations that will follow, essentially you can think about Vx is just some say gammas as some polynomial of even degree with positive leading coefficient. Actually, one can generalize significantly the situation, and you can, in principle, consider sufficiently smooth function v, which grows at infinity faster than a logarithm, but it's not that important. So, first thing that I want to explain, and this very classical thing goes back to maybe Hoare 50 years ago, and it's actually some mathematical statisticians even 70 years ago, is the fact that if you have this probability measure on the ensemble of Hermitian matrices, then actually you have induced measure on, this, on the eigenvalues. So please note that random Hermitian matrix has n eigenvalues, all real, of course, and they are random. So the question is, what is the joint distribution? The result is the following. So I will write it as a proposition. And the joint distribution of this eigenvalues has a density with respect to the Lebesgue measure. And I will just write down the formula for the density. And again, you have normalization constant, which can be calculated. And, well, it's not important now for our purposes, but it can be calculated if you want to. And then you have van der Mond, and you, of course, multiply by the factor that you inherit from here. Right? So as all of you now realize that essentially what you're doing, you just consider change of variables. You pass from matrix entries to spectral variables, and you calculate Jacobian. And Jacobian is going to be this beast. So perhaps I just will spend 10 minutes explaining a little more in details this, but it's not something exciting. So the what's going on? And yes, of course, for many of you, it's clear that there is a clear analogy with value integration formula for the Haar measure of the unitary group, for example. Right. All right. So, if you have a Haar measure of the unitary group, then you have value integration formula for class functions. So, in other words, if you consider Haar measure of the unitary group, then you can also talk about the distribution of the eigenvalues. Then you also have van der Mond squared. Well, it's not important at all. It's just a side remark that can be ignored and should be probably ignored. All right. So all what I want to do the following thing. Of course, you can write Hermitian matrix as a diagonal matrix after a proper change of basis, and you will be a unitary matrix, right? Right. So let us order the eigenvalues. If you order the eigenvalues, then this unitary matrix U, which is just the matrix where you have eigenvectors and columns, of course, as all of us know from linear algebra, then this unitary matrix U is defined uniquely up to phases. So actually, you better talk about U modulo Tn. Indeed, you can multiply any eigenvector by a complex number with absolute value 1, and you still have an eigenvector, right? So, as a result... it's a very good, actually, remark, but that was what I was going to tell the next. Thank you very much. Yes. So, of course, the next thing is that with probability 1, the eigenvalues are... all designed and different, sorry. All right, so and again, one therefore considers so let me a new variables, right? So, and pure spectral variables, they're give the parameterization of. I will talk in a little bit in a minute about this. So you can talk about this as Euler angles, but actually it's not important. Well, I will explain in a second. I will just say 10 minutes in this. So, as Nicole absolutely correctly remarked, first of all, you have to say that if you consider space of Hermitian matrices, then with probability 1, eigenvalues are all different. And actually, the space of matrices with different eigenvalues, set of matrices with different eigenvalues is open, dense, has measure 1. All you have to do, you have to consider the determinant of matrix, and if it's zero, then you have a submanifold, actually of codimension 3. All right, now what you're really doing is you consider a homogeneous manifold, so you have all cosets, right? And this homogeneous manifold has dimension n minus 1, and there is a general effect that locally you have a smooth section. And then essentially what's going on is the following. If you have an element, this manifold, and you consider some neighborhood this neighborhood of this element, then you have a mapping. The unitary group, which preserves fibers. So in other words, you have, if you apply first this mapping and then apply projection, then you have identity. Well, actually, if you wish to, you don't need to worry about these things. What you really need to worry is that, all right, you want to consider new coordinates, you have n eigenvalues, then you define this unitary matrix up to phases, and then you can easily find parameterization. In particular, what you do if you consider, say, some representation of this coset, so you have some unitary matrix, you consider for each column the first non-zero element. All right? And you certainly can find a representation of this coset for which this element is positive. And then in the neighborhood of this element, you just consider parameterization in such a way that all such elements that you find in such a way are positive. So there is a way to do this, and actually there is a pedestrian way, but it's not that important. What is important is that now if you consider a Jacobian of the change of variables, then if you write down explicitly the partial derivatives, then you realize that actually Jacobian will be some polynomial in lambdas with coefficients, of course, depending on this additional spectral parameters. Indeed, you can see that lambdas here appear linearly. So when you calculate partial derivatives, then, of course, you have stressed linear function on lambdas, then you can consider determinant, it will be just some polynomial. Either way, either you do it directly or you just look here, you can immediately realize that actually what you're going to have is indeed Vandermonde multiplied by something, say f, which depends on this additional spectral variables, because you can ask yourself only when Jacobian vanishes. And it vanishes only when eigenvalues are equal, because indeed, if eigenvalues are equal, then you cannot uniquely define eigenvectors, because you can rotate. So if you have two equal eigenvalues, right, you consider corresponding eigensubspace, and if you want to choose eigenvectors, you can rotate eigenvectors any way you wish, just preserving, of course, them to be orthogonal, right? So either you just use a simple argument, or, again, it's not very difficult just to calculate these partial derivatives and can look at the Jacobian and see it directly. Either way, it's...
It only not explain why it is square.
Yes, of course, but first of all, it's right, thank you very much. Then naturally, this polynomial is homogeneous, and you know the right degree of the polynomial. So it's right. Yeah. So thank you very much. All right. Either way, so this was not supposed to be the high topic of this talk. It was just some warm up. And now I want to talk about some Meissen random matrices that actually are very useful. All right. So, as I explained, after you can say change of variables, you have factorization. So you have a product of two functions. One depends only on lambda, another depends on p's. Therefore, if you consider only the induced distribution of the eigenvalues, you have this nice formula. All right, so what, essentially? The beauty of the unitary ensembles is that this formula appears to be very manageable, very simple. In particular, one can easily calculate k-point correlation functions. And for a minute, may look some stupid integral, but after I do this, I will explain why they're extremely useful in all local statistics. So, formally, correlation function, k-point correlation function, is the following thing. One second, by the way. Yes, and also maybe one remark. In this derivation of this result, I considered lambdas to be ordered. But please note that the actual density is symmetric respect to lambdas. Therefore, you can consider lambdas to be unordered and divide everything by 1 over n factorial. And you have the spectral, the density function for unordered collection of eigenvalues. That's what we consider now. Now, if you have this distribution of the eigenvalues, k-point correlation function is this integral. So we integrate out the last n minus k variables. And as I explained last time, essentially it just gives you the density to find a particle in each k very small, infinitesimally small intervals around points lambda 1, etc., lambda k. All right. Before we can calculate explicitly this beast, we need to make some changes. We need to make some modifications in this formula. So please note that, we have some weight here. In particular, say, V is quadratic polynomial, then we have some Gaussian weight. So it's very tempting to replace here in this Vandermonde monomials by orthogonal polynomials respect to this weight. That's exactly what's being done now. So if you have a Vandermonde, right, up to a very simple factor, this is the following determinant. Right? Now, if you consider a measure on the real line, for a minute, I just consider Vandermonde. Okay. Then, of course, I will consider square. If you have a measure on the real line, then if V grows to infinity sufficiently fast, you have orthogonal polynomials with respect to this measure. right? So first obvious remark is that if you replace in this determinant monomials by corresponding orthogonal polynomials, then maximum that changes, you have additional constant in front. This is just very simple observation from linear algebra, because essentially just adding the corresponding. So what I'm saying is that if instead of monomials here, you consider orthogonal polynomials, yes, of degrees 0, 1, etc., n minus 1. The way is here, you had monomials of degree 0, 1, etc., n minus 1. Both of them form basis in the space of polynomials of degree not greater than n minus 1. Therefore, the determinant changes only by a constant. Because what you're doing here is just adding columns. I'm sorry, rows. So it's very simple linear algebra. All right. But this is much more better to us, because essentially then we can expect to use orthogonality property in a proper place with respect to the weight that is weighted here in the bushes. All right? So, if you wish, now if you introduce orthogonal functions, right? Oh, by the way, it's of course the case of bet notation. I stupidly use Pn here, and then I use orthogonal polynomials also P. So, all right. Yes. Okay. Then this probability density again up to a constant, which is now probably a new constant, right? Can be written in the following way: you have a determinant. Now these things. Let me write in this way. But determinant must be squared, because indeed you have van der Mond squared. Well, the last trick that you do is just you write determinant of this matrix squared is determinant of this matrix multiplied by determinant of the transpose matrix. Once you do this, what will be here, it will be determinant of the something like this. You just multiply two matrices. So finally, let me write in the following form. Up to a constant, which is normalization constant, your probability density of the eigenvalues, now it's x is not lambdas, is given by the determinant of n by n matrix with some kernel k, which of course depends on n.
Lambda I should
be not equal to lambda j. When you come to x, it's no matter for you anymore.
Yes.
Every... No, I just again, I just x is a lambda.
It's
my fault. Right, and the kernel in question. Well, say now can be written in this form. Right? So anyway, whether it can be, it is completely transparent or not, you can see that it's a matter of very simple tricks and nothing else. And as a result, you stay at the determinant with this kernel. there are some good things about this kernel that you can immediately notice. Namely, this is a kernel of orthogonal projection on the subspace spanned by first n functions here. Remember, they are orthogonal in A2 R1, these functions. So in particular, well, in other words, and this is integral operator, the operator of this kernel of rank n, and it's an orthogonal projection. All right? Now we are ready to calculate key point correlation functions. And the lemma is the following. In this lemma, I will already incorporate the fact that I know this coefficient, but it can be recovered actually essentially from this lemma as well. The lemma is the following. If you have a k point correlation function for any k, then this is just a determinant of k by k matrix, in particular if k is small, then matrix will have dimension, small dimension, with very same kernel. So in other words, if you look at this function and want to integrate out, say, xn, then what you obtain is, of course, is a new function of n minus 1 variables, but which has the same form, which is just the determinant of n minus 1 matrix with the same kernel. And then you can continue this procedure many times.
Yes, but
we will take care of the constant, and since at the end we must obtain 1 after we integrate everything, because mm-hmm. we have a probability measure, then actually we can go back and recover the constant. In particular here, now it can be said, but it will be seen later, that the constant is 1 over n factorial, in particular. All right, so well, this is, again, it's not very difficult, as you can see, but it's very crucial in random matrix theory. And when you have some applications for random matrices to other areas, and you have similar kernels, it's useful. So I'm going to use only two facts that actually are probably written here. Namely, first of all, if I consider the trace of my projection, the trace is just n. In other words, if I integrate the diagonal of this kernel, I obtain n. And indeed, it's just because the rank of my projector is n. And second thing, I want to say that the square of the projection is the projection again itself. So, all right. So these two things are very useful. Okay. And indeed, the proof is rather elementary. What you're looking at, let's just try to do it once. So let's integrate with respect to the last variable, xn. You write determinant as a sum over permutations. So, somewhere here you have sum over elements of symmetric group. And then, of course, you have a product of products of matrix elements corresponding to cycles. Right? So, any permutation can be written as a product of cycles, something very simple. And there are two possibilities. If index n under this permutation is fixed, then at some point you just have a lone factor kn xn xn, and xn doesn't appear anywhere else. Then, of course, you integrate it with respect to xn and just use this thing. Please note that when you do this, you, so to speak, shrink this product. What is left is actually left as a sum over permutations of Sn minus 1, of n minus 1 objects. Alright? A second thing that may happen is that if you consider, say, if you have your permutation sigma and you have a cycle and n appears somewhere in some cycle of length more than 1, then essentially what you have to do, you have to integrate the product of these two functions with respect to Xn. And Xn will not appear anywhere else, of course, again. Alright? So when you do this, you obtain Kn Xi1 Xi2, and you have again permutation on n minus 1 objects. Actually, the sign then will change by minus 1. You group everything together, and you have exactly what you need to. And so there is nothing important. Actually. Yes. Yes. In general, let me formulate the lemma. Suppose, you see here the integral equals to n. Now, suppose it's some d. Because, I don't want this to... indexes. The fact that n here is equal to n here is just some coincidence. In general, maybe d. So suppose you have some kernel with these two properties, and you want to integrate out the last variable. In general, the thing is that the result is this one. So d appeared from the permutations when n is fixed. N minus 1 appeared because, look, what I'm saying is that, Vitaly, consider in general, suppose you have just some kernel k. Forget about n at all. Yeah, some kernel k. The fact that, of course, you have to use it several times. The remark that I try to somehow give birth now is just, I want to explain how you can know the coefficient here, the normalizing coefficient. Mm-hmm. Because, here n minus 1, yes.
Also in the
here, n minus 1 here just because of this dimension.
K, n minus 1, k.
Where?
You cancel, it's the same, you just cancel xn.
No, I think that d minus n minus 1.
Index is 1 less than
1
equal I
equals
n
minus 1,
yes?
Yeah. Yes. So what I'm trying to tell you is that you can iterate this thing. Yes. And then you just pick up the product.
K became n minus 1 in your definition because it's 1 less inside.
I don't have any k except for the kernel. No, in the kernel I still have, forget about, for example, n.
Okay.
The kernel is the same. Yes, the kernel is the same. You cannot get any new kernel because of this. Yes. The exposition was sloppy, but the message is clear. So the point is that fortunately you can do this again and again. And eventually, again, after n integrations, you must have 1, so you go back and just recapture the coefficients. And,
I'm not sure. I think maybe there is confusion. It is the same Kn.
Yes, the same Kn.
It depends, I think, on
so, let's
define Kn as the sum of n terms.
No,
and
so
it is one term.
And it's still the same.
You are right. It's so just less product.
Yes.
Okay, so...
So let's forget about n. Let's consider this just as a lemma.
Okay.
So you have a function of n variables. Oops. Shoot. You have a function of n variables.
This was not clear. The number of products and the number of...
Right. And you integrate with respect to xn. You obtain this similar function of n minus 1 variables with some coefficient in front which is defined by these two things. All right. In our case, we had this. So, anyway, I just want to somehow to write down the result of these manipulations. The result is the following. First of all, of course, we have the formula exactly in the way it's written here for the joint distribution of the eigenvalues. And secondly, actually, I probably stupidly erased. And actually, you have also k-point correlation functions. And if you look explicitly, it appears that the coefficient here will be 1. So it just... All right? So why k-point correlation functions are important? Let's now explain this. What... yes, probably somewhere you put right. And, what is one-point correlation function? One-point correlation function is just spectral density. If you look more carefully, maybe for a few minutes, at these definitions, actually it's simple. Namely, if you integrate one-point correlation function over any interval, alpha, beta, then what you just obtain mathematical expectation of the number of eigenvalues in this interval. In a similar way, actually, this nicely can be generalized to higher moments. Namely, if you have k-point correlation function, and integrate over k-dimensional cube with side alpha beta, then, well, essentially you have a k-th moment, only you need to be slightly more careful, you have k-th factorial moment. Because what you're doing here, you calculate the expected number of k-tuples. So you have k-th factorial moment. Anyway, whether it can be seen now or not, it's what's important is that it's something not difficult. So k-th factorial moment. So if you know correlation of functions, and if you integrate them over appropriate intervals, you can recapture all moments of the number of particles in this, the number of eigenvalues in this interval. In particular, maybe at the end of this lecture, it will be clear that if you know correlation functions, actually probably I will do it in a few minutes, if you know correlation functions, then you can, for example, calculate the probability that you have no eigenvalues in some interval, or have exactly, say, m eigenvalues in this interval. Therefore, the next natural question arises. What is important in random matrices is to understand global picture, it's easier, and local picture. Well, what is global picture? You have n eigenvalues. Maybe you normalize them in appropriate way, in such a way that all lambdas essentially are on some finite interval, say minus 1, 1. And again, after some normalization, what you really want, you want this random measure, which has atoms at the eigenvalues, to have a limit and then goes to infinity to some non-random measure. So in this case, you have limiting spectral density. Well, if you consider mathematical expectation of this random measure, then, as follows from here, actually, all you just have a measure with the density which is one-point correlation function. So in particular, the question is what can be said about one-point correlation function and the limit after appropriate rescaling, say. And in general, okay, this is global question. Local question. What you hope is that, suppose you have eigenvalues somewhere here, lambda 1, etc. What you hope to understand... For example, the answer to the following question. Consider zero. And consider, say, first eigenvalue to the right from zero. Or maybe you can replace zero by any other point. It's not important. And you want to know what is the probability that, say, what is the distribution of the distance from zero to the next eigenvalue, the first positive eigenvalue. Or maybe you are interested in the distribution of the spacings between eigenvalues. Of course, first of all, you have to understand in which way you have to rescale eigenvalues, because in principle, in particular in our case, if you don't consider any rescaling, then eigenvalues will be very close to each other, and on average, the distance between them will be 1 over square root of n. So, okay, you consider proper rescaling, so you extend all picture square root of n times, and then you hope that in the limit n goes to infinity, you have nice distributions for the objects that I tried to describe here. Then, what you really have to understand, you have to understand the behavior of this kernel, the syntotics of this kernel in the limit n goes to infinity. After appropriate rescaling. All right, so if you need to understand the syntotics of this kernel, then you have to look at this kernel and you understand that you are looking at the syntotics of orthogonal polynomials. This kernel actually has a special name, it's Christoffel-Darboux kernel. And it can be written in a better way if you wish. I don't know, maybe it's not better way, but in a less intimidating way, so to speak, like this. Which involves only n's and n minus 1's orthogonal polynomial. And here you have some coefficient of the Jacobi matrix associated with this orthogonal polynomial. So anyway, something that is just constant. So if you want to study the syntotics of this kernel, then you have to study the syntotics of orthogonal polynomial. In particular, in the case of GUE, say, when you have quadratic polynomial, these functions are just Hermite functions. So Hermite polynomials multiplied by Gaussian weight. And this is a very classical result due to Planchere and Rota. And in general, basically you can say everything, you can get anything what you want about the syntotics. So in particular, that's how two limiting kernels appear that are very famous in random matrix theory. You have two limiting regimes. One limiting regime is in the back of the spectrum. So again, your eigenvalues will look like this. You have many eigenvalues. If you appropriately rescale them, they will be inside integral minus 1, 1, say. All right? If you consider any point in the bulk, say, 2 over 3, and consider rescaling near this point, it corresponds essentially to the fact that you consider the syntotics of Hermite functions in the bulk, not close to the turning point, so to speak. Either way, you can see that in the limit, this kernel has a nice limit, which is called sine kernel. All right? So this is one thing. Second thing that, you may want to study, say, the first few largest eigenvalues of a random matrix. Then you can, again, have to study the syntotics of this kernel, after appropriate rescaling, of course, but near the edge. Actually, to be absolutely correct, in our normalization, we have this point square root of n, but it's not important. Yes. So it is known that if you have nth Hermite polynomial, that at some interval it just behaves essentially as a trigonometric function, it oscillates. And it's clear because, it satisfies. This differential equation. So you have two regimes, of oscillation, then of exponential decay. Of course, there is something non-trivial happening in the turning point. And this is another matter. And near the turning point, you have area function appearing in the asymptotics. Right? Essentially, because near the turning point, you can linearize this quadratic thing. Anyway, either way, what I'm trying to tell you is that near the edge, again, after appropriate rescaling, you have another limit, which is called area kernel. All right. And again, area functions appear just because of the syntotics of this thing. Now, the big question was, and actually to some extent still stands tall, is can one obtain similar results for general potential V? maybe under suitable conditions on V, of course. And this is very non-trivial method because one way you have to study asymptotic orthogonal polynomials with respect to the general weight, and actually the weight is even will have dependence on n because you have properly normalized your eigenvalues. So essentially you have this measure even with dependence on n, and then you have to study the asymptotics of say nth orthogonal polynomial with respect to this measure.
Other ensemble, not Hermitian, it is
say,
the same potential, just the same theory.
We'll talk, yes, it's, yes, thank you. It's a good point. And again, it's very recently it's done for sufficiently general class of V by Deft and his collaborators. So, and in a different way, as I explained in my talk, it was done by Pasteur and other people. So I gave references last time, so I don't want to talk again. All right, so maybe one more thing for today. I don't know if I can use in any way that the behavior, the asymptotic behavior of this kernel is the most important thing in the local analysis, but maybe to give you one more argument for this, I just want to calculate explicitly the probability that you have no eigenvalues in some interval. It will be some Fredholm determinant with this kernel. The formulas are simple, but let's just do it. So, well, everywhere I will say, I will consider the interval minus theta theta. It's not important in any way. I mean, you can consider any other interval. In particular, it may depend on n. So, of course, I will write dependence on n because I have n by n matrix. So I want to calculate the probability. Say probability. Have no eigenvalues. No eigenvalues in the interval minus theta theta. All right? So how you do this thing? Well, of course, you consider joint density of the eigenvalues. But now you have to integrate the joint density with the restriction that xi's are greater than theta by an absolute value. Theta equals. Right? Well, well, first of all, we know what is the joint density, what the joint density is. And secondly, we can forget about this restriction if we just write down here the product of indicators. So in other words, let's write 1 minus the indicator. The thing. Right? So once you open the bracket, essentially it's principle of inclusion-exclusion, of course. Nothing else. Once you open the brackets, you will have to calculate the integrals of the following form. You have this determinant. And then say you have the product of a few indicators. Since the function is symmetric with respect to variables xi, for example, say I will have the product of first k indicators. All right? So if you write it down, what you have, and again, if you first you have to integrate out the remaining n minus k variables. This can be done essentially the same way as it was explained when we did correlation of functions. So if you do this, you are going to have the following thing. You have, first of all, some coefficient which appears when you integrate determinant, you have some constant in front. And then you have just the integral of the same determinant. I'm sorry, the integral of the same of the function having the same form, now only determinant will be determinant of k by k matrix. And you integrate.
Sorry, what is now k?
So what I'm trying to tell you is that, okay, this is the probability that you have no eigenvalues in some interval. Now I want to consider the typical term.
I don't
Once you open the brackets,
k is now the number of eigenvalues.
No, k is nothing. It's just the typical term. Once you open here the brackets, the number of characteristic function. Yeah.
Now you look at the typical term.
Yeah. Okay. In particular, you have exactly n choose k such terms, right? So then you have this beast. If you plug everything together, this probability is going to be the following thing. All right. Somewhere n minus n, yes, one over n factorial appeared here. Mm-hmm. Then what you're going to have nk, because you have explicitly n choose k such terms, and then you have also n minus k factorial, and then you have this integral. All right. This combinatorial coefficients are nothing else but just 1 over k factorial. As a result, you see that let me first try to give you the answer and then explain. What you just have, you just have the Feldhorn determinant of operator with the kernel k restricted to the integral minus theta indeed. Because when you consider Feldhorn determinant, you can write the series involving traces of exterior powers of operator k. And the trace of k's exterior power is exactly this determinant multiplied by 1 over k factorial. All right? So, again, your answer depends in a very important way on the kernel. In a similar way, you can calculate the probability that you have exactly, say, m eigenvalues in this interval. Or in general, you can say the following. So what I'm trying to write, maybe I'll say it here. If you consider operator with the kernel k, say the kernel k. Now if you consider this operator taken to some exterior power m, so this operator, for example, acted on a2, say r, or maybe some e, right? This operator will act on a tensor product of L2 spaces, and also, of course, you have considered only anti-symmetric part. So in either way, if you consider the trace of this thing, or maybe the better analogy, consider the matrix and then consider the tensor product of the matrix with itself and consider only restriction to anti-symmetric space and ask about the trace of this new matrix. The same thing, of course, you have for integral operators. Now, if you consider the trace, it's just 1 over m factorial, the integral of this thing. Indeed, if you just consider the tensor product of this operator with itself m times, your new kernel will be just the product of essentially of the kernels, right? But if you restrict to anti-symmetric functions, then you have the sum of all permutations, and then naturally, what you see, you have some determinant. So either way, what I'm trying to tell you is that this is some classical formula for a Feldhorn determinant. It's not important even if it's derived or not here. What is the answer? Is that, again, the answer is given in terms of this kernel in a very important and way. So indeed, if you want to study these things, you have to study the asymptotics of the kernel. So I'm about to finish.
What was the answer to the Gideon's question about whether you need
an integral?
Yeah, you did. Okay.
Yes.
You need an integral in the last line. You did this. No, the next line?
Yes.
There is an integral.
No.
Very integral.
No.
You look at it, and it includes this.
No, this is frequently determined. So if you have, again, it's another way, if you have an operator, this is just the product of course, your operator must satisfy certain conditions of 1 minus lambda eigenvalue. So it's what you want. Okay. Of course, it must be trace class operator and all these things. But this is beyond the point. Again, what I'm just trying to tell you is just want to show you the formula and just insist that everything depends on this kernel. So it's indeed very paramount to study the syntotics of this kernel. And the last formula that I want to show, and then I stop, is that, all right, what is about, say, the probability that you have specifically m eigenvalues in some interval, etc. And, of course, I can write here the formula for each m, but it's easier to consider generating function. So in probability theory, what you consider mathematical expectation of some parameter z, complex number in absolute value less than 1, taken to the power of the number of particles in the number of eigenvalues in the interval minus theta theta. So this is your random variable. Now you consider new random variable, just taking z, some complex z, to this power. This is new random variable. And you take mathematical expectation. Why this is nice? Because if you write down this mathematical expectation, this is nothing else but just, the Taylor series, where coefficients are probabilities. Indeed, just by the very definition. So, if you want to calculate all these probabilities, well, it's enough to consider this generating function. And in our case, again, you can do very similar thing, and I just want to give you the answer. The answer is, again, of course, Fredholm determinant. Z appears here, z minus 1, and then, of course, you have still this restriction of your k to interval minus theta theta. So again, if you know the kernel, you can reconstruct the distribution of this random variable. Right? In particular, what you want to do in the limit? You want to consider rescaling in such a way that the distance between neighbors is of order of 1, so it doesn't go...